It was six guys. They had, four of them had guns, two of them had machetes. So they took my car, forced me into the back seat, just drove up a road basically until they got the car stuck because the roads are all muddy and nasty. Just drove until they got stuck. Then they took everything I had, which luckily wasn't much. You know, they got.
Well, we've got a special surprise for you today. We've got Ray and Jess Willett, and their three children are back from Papua New Guinea. And they are here for a vacation, a well-deserved vacation. He almost got nixed while he was over there. He was abducted by some people, and he survived through this, and he was able to evangelize the people that abducted him. So this is a guy that really loves the Lord. He's set in his theology. He's set in his determination to pursue being a missionary, and his wife Jess is in exactly the same position with him. Having said that, I'm not going to speak anymore. I'm going to let him go from there. So come on up here, Ray. This is Ray Willett from Papua New Guinea.
Well, thank you, Charlie. Thank you, Superior Word Church, for having us here this morning. We're going to start real quick from the Word of God in the Psalms. In Psalm 56, I'd like to read. Psalm 56, to the chief musician, set to the silent dove in distant lands, a miktam of David when the Philistines captured him in Gath. Be merciful to me, O God, for man would swallow me up. Fighting all day, he oppresses me. My enemies would hound me all day, for there are many who fight against me, O Most High. Whenever I am afraid, I will trust in you. In God, I will praise his word. In God, I have put my trust. I will not fear. What can flesh do to me? All day they twist my words. All their thoughts are against me for evil. They gather together. They hide. They mark my steps when they lie in wait for my life. Shall they escape by iniquity? In anger, cast down the peoples, O God. You number my wanderings. Put my tears into your bottle. Are they not in your book? When I cry out to you, then my enemies will turn back. This I know, because God is for me. In God I will praise his word. In the Lord I will praise his word. In God I have put my trust. I will not be afraid. What can man do to me? Vows made to you are binding upon me, O God. I will render praises to you, for you have delivered my soul from death. Have you not kept my feet from falling, that I may walk before God in the light of the living? So I'm going to share this morning with you. We've been over in Papua New Guinea for about 4 years, almost 4 years. So I'd like to share with you about, you know, what took place over those 4 years, what we were involved in, and just how the Lord used us and how the Lord worked in our own lives while we were over there. So, yeah, in 2019, our family left the Golden Shores of Sarasota to move to Papua New Guinea to begin ministering to the people of Papua New Guinea. Papua New Guinea is the most diverse country on the planet. There's over 850 different people groups with distinct languages, distinct culture, distinct religious practices. To put that in perspective, America, which is thought of as the melting pot of the world, it's estimated that we probably have amongst our population about 500 people groups represented. And Papua New Guinea, which is landmass-wise about the size of California, has 850 different people groups living in it. So it's an enormous task. There probably are not enough missionaries in the world today to be able to do all the work that needs to be done to reach those people. So it's a monumental task, and our family decided we would be willing to step out and maybe do our little part of trying to reach Papua New Guinea. When we first got to Papua New Guinea, we had a field orientation that lasted about 4 months with other families that were new missionaries on the field. During that field orientation, we began to learn the trade language, which is a language spoken by not all, but most people in Papua New Guinea, but it is their second language. So we began to learn the trade language. We're starting to meet people in the community in a town called Medang. It's on the north coast of Papua New Guinea. For those who don't know, Papua New Guinea is an island nation in the South Pacific. It's just north of Australia. So during our field orientation, we began to learn the language. We began to learn a little bit about culture. You see this guy over here on the right in the green shirt, his name's Joshua. He's a believer who lives and works on our base there. So he's teaching us how they work in their gardens. He's teaching us how they build fires, little simple things, and kind of showing us when you guys go out into the villages and you're going out to the places and trying to learn from these people, here's how you can do it. And he kind of helps us there. We're learning how to function in the country. We're learning how to go to the market, how to buy, you know, produce and so that we can feed our family. At the same time, we're meeting, you can see that picture on the left-hand side in the middle there. We're meeting for church services, and it's a mixed group of expat missionaries as well as PNG people in those church services. So it's a lot of transitions and just learning new things. That field orientation lasted us about 4 months. We can get the next slide ready, Sergio. The field orientation, it lasts 4 months, and in terms of learning a language, that's actually a long time for learning the trade language, which is a pidgin that's based upon all the colonial languages. So it's Dutch, German, English. It's got all the colonial languages sort of mixed into it. So for English speakers, it's a relatively easy language to learn. So by the time we were done with our field orientation, we were already able to have simple conversations with people. Nothing deep, but simple conversations. After that, we had our bush orientation. Now, our bush orientation is where we actually move out into a bush location, out in the jungle, with another missionary that's already been there, and in most cases, they've already planted a church, and now they're working on discipling that church and trying to find men to become elders in the church, training pastors and that kind of thing. So we go, we live with those missionaries. They teach us about life in the jungle, what it's going to be like practically. You see our three kids sharing a bath in the top left picture there. You know, you have to conserve your water. You have to conserve electricity because we're running on solar and batteries, and everything's very limited. So that's part of the practical side of living in the bush. But what we also learn about is how to do ministry with tribal people, because it's different. It's a different cultural context. The way we do our work, whether it's translating the Bible, whether it's preparing Bible studies or Bible lessons, all of that, it looks different when you're doing it in a different language and different culture. When we sit down for Sunday morning church in America, everyone kind of has an idea. And lots of churches are different and they have little differences. But for the most part, we kind of do the same things on Sundays. And over in PNG, when you're out in the jungle, it's the same thing. There's some teaching. We sit down. They celebrate communion. But it looks a lot different than the way it looks here. So you can see in that bottom left-hand corner, that is the church that Dan, Holly, and Levi Lenz planted in a place called North Wagi. It's up in the highlands of Papua New Guinea. Actually, it gets kind of cold up there in the evenings. So we got to see what it looks like to do church, to disciple people in that sort of strange jungle context. You can see this guy over here on the far right. I'm standing next to a guy. That's basically North Wagi's version of a tuxedo. That was at a wedding celebration, and that was the brother of the bride, and they were dressed up in their full, like, formal tribal outfit. But if you look really close on his left hand, on his left wrist, you'll see a digital watch. Papua New Guinea is this strange place trapped between the Stone Age and the Digital Age. You go to these places, and it's just like you would picture, you know, huts and fires, and they don't have toilets, they just have a hole in the ground, and it's primitive, it's very primitive, they use primitive tools and all those things, but then at the same time, you'll see somebody walk by with a cell phone. And so it's a strange dynamic, and it's a new thing for missionaries to try and navigate, because, you know, all of a sudden, these people living out in the jungle are starting to have access to media. They're starting to have access to phones and even being able to get onto YouTube and movies. And that's great, because if they're on YouTube, they can tune into the Superior Word every Sunday. But it's also bad, because there's a lot of stuff on YouTube that is not healthy for a young believer as you're trying to disciple them, and they're being exposed to this negative media. So it creates a difficult situation often. But we loved our bush orientation. We got to build relationships for the first time. When we were in our field orientation, we were living on a base in town. There weren't a ton of believers there. When we were in our bush orientation, we got to really live life with some of these believers. Most of them were still baby Christians, still being discipled, still learning what it means to walk with the Lord. But just really were able to develop some really sweet friendships and relationships with some of those people out there. And so it was a great time. It was a great learning experience for us. And the church there really took us under their wings and just taught us so much about PNG, about the culture, about what it's going to take to reach the unreached people in PNG. So that was a great time. So it was during our bush orientation where we first got a taste of having to really trust the Lord in a situation that we had no control over. We were at what's basically a PNG barbecue. They call it a mumu. They cook some stones in the ground. They put the meat on top of the hot, you know, red hot stones, and that's how they kind of do their barbecue. Well, one of the stones blew up in the fire, and some debris flew out of the fire and hit Matthew in the head. And at first he looked okay, like a little scrape, but then all of a sudden a hematoma blew up in his head about the size of a grapefruit.
Yeah.
And that was a scary moment, because we were out in the middle of nowhere. We didn't have access to hospitals or doctors or anything. It was rainy season, so it was slippery outside, and Jessica and I are holding our kids, and we're trying to run through this, you know, muddy trail, and we're slipping and falling on our butts. Finally, the people, you see that group of people in that top middle picture there, they just said, "Give us your children." And they just put our kids on their backs and they just ran full speed through this mud, you know. And me and Jessica are like behind them trying to keep up, slipping and sliding all over the place. But we were able to get back to, and we were so thankful for this, the missionaries we were staying with. They are Welsh. They're from Wales. And she was a doctor.
Oh.
Before they became a missionary. So like we had a doctor there that could, you know, take a look at him. We called up some of the doctors that work on our base, and we were, you know, what do we need to do about this? And we, you know, we got it all figured out, and Matthew ended up being fine. And Matthew had a great testimony before the people, because he said, you know, I could have been blinded by that, but the Lord had mercy on me. But even if I was blinded, even if I died, this is what Matthew said. And at the time he was maybe 6 or 7. And he said, but even if I died, God is still good. And that was a testimony he had before these baby believers that were in this church in Wagi. And so we were so thankful for that testimony from our young son. And, you know, and we were excited to see how the people responded to that testimony from a child. So that was a really cool moment. So after our bush orientation, which lasts about 2 months, we were up in Goroka. And then we split time between three bases: Goroka, which is up in the mountains, and Hoskins and Kevyang, which are two coastal towns that we have bases on. And during this time, we were finishing up learning the language. You know, at this point, we were learning the kinds of things that you would need to know about the language if you were going to write a book in that language, but not really things that are important for just having conversation or even teaching and things like that. It was really, we were down to just the last little grammatical structures and things like that. So by this time, we were already able to teach in the language. So this was my favorite time the whole time we were in the country, because when we were living up in Goroka, I befriended two Bible teachers that were trained by some of our other missionaries. And the three of us would go out. They went out 7 nights a week and taught Bible studies, taught Bible lessons. And I went out with them normally at least 5 nights a week. We would go out for 2 or 3 hours, teach Bible lessons, take people through what we call our chronological teaching. It's an evangelistic Bible teaching where we take people from the very beginning through the Old Testament and up to the death, burial, and resurrection of Christ. And it's a really awesome evangelistic tool that gives people a big picture of what the Bible is about. And it was an awesome time. We got to do that Bible study with probably, I would guess it was probably around 300 people that we took through the Bible study, and a great number of them, I would say more than half of them, were saved, put their trust in Christ, and even now, those people that we were leading to the Lord are plugged into churches in the Goroka Valley. They are doing, a lot of them are involved in ministry themselves, and they've become dear friends to us. Anytime we're going through, our main headquarters is in Goroka, so we're there not really often, but often enough that we get to see them fairly regularly and, you know, visit with all those people. And, man, the Lord just did a real work. And, you know, for those of you who have been with us from the beginning, you know we spent 5 years in training before we ever got to the field. So this was like a long time coming, getting to see the first fruits of our ministry in Papua New Guinea. So it was a really exciting time. During this time, while we were in Goroka, splitting time between Goroka, Hoskins, and Kevin, we began forming a team, because when we do church planting works, when we move out to the jungle full time and do church planting works, we always try and work in teams. So we're meeting other families that are out on the field, other missionary families, trying to form a team. You see the guy on the far right, the tall guy, and then the very center picture is Jessica, my wife, on the right, and another lady named Candace on the left. Those were our first teammates, Candace and Stephen Schrader. And we were ready to move into the jungle with them, and then COVID hit, and they went home for COVID because their young son had some pre-existing respiratory issues. And so our doctors sent them home right away and said, we don't know what COVID is going to be, so, you know, we just want to play it safe. Well, while they were home, their son was diagnosed as moderately autistic. And we knew that he had some developmental delays, but we didn't realize how bad it was until they got some testing. And basically that took them off the field permanently. Our doctors said, you know, there's no way while you're on the field that he can get the kinds of therapies and things that he needs to be able to function. So they had to stay home. It's a terrible loss for them. It was a terrible loss for us losing our teammates like that. I will say that their son Miles has made a lot of improvement and is doing well, is starting to, you know, talk and communicate, which he wasn't doing. They still feel that loss. So if you think of it, you can pray for Stephen and Candace. So that was our first set of coworkers that came and went. And then on the left-hand side of that picture, at the very left-hand picture on the top, that guy on the front right, his name's Chris Weaver. That he and his wife and two children were our second set of coworkers. They had adopted a baby from PNG, and someone outside the mission leaked information to the birth family about who had adopted their child, and that created a major security issue for them especially, but for our whole mission. And so the mission pulled them out of the area they were. They're still in the country, working in a different part of the country now, but it put all of our plans on hold for, at the time, they said it was going to be at least 2 years. So we kind of moved on from that and said, all right, we're going to look for a new team again and figure these things out. So this is not what we desired, and it's not what we expected when we were going to PNG, but sometimes the Lord takes us on the long road, and that's what he was doing. So when we lost these two teammates, it was a difficult time for us. We were, like, really ready to get out there into the jungle and begin a church planting work, but the Lord had other plans. We ended up taking a temporary support position on the base in Madang. I was basically the mayor of our base, was my job. I was the everything of the base. I was the maintenance guy. You know, I was kind of doing everything. I was looking after the base, managing all of our national employees that worked on the base. And so it was sort of a temporary position we were filling as we were looking for new teammates. And during this time, though, we had a lot more opportunities for ministry. Jessica, too, got to teach a lot of ladies' Bible studies with some ladies in the community. We did get to see some people getting saved. We did get to we were involved in the discipleship of a lot of the people in the local church. So it's not like we weren't involved in those kinds of ministries, but it wasn't what we were planning to do. You know, that wasn't where we were headed. But God used that time to grow us, to teach us a lot of things, and it was an important part of the journey that God's put us on in PNG. So we're not at all upset about it. It was a difficult time for us, not being able to do the ministry we had come to do, but we were hoping that it was just a short detour and that we would be back on track soon enough. So we had another, while we were doing this job in Madang, we had another pretty big event come up. This is a newspaper clipping. You see a picture of me there. If you look closely in the middle of that bus I was driving, you see the bullet holes. And if you read the article, you'll see a whole bunch of, if you see the article, you'll see a whole bunch of facts that are incorrect. For instance, I am not an Australian. I do not work for SIL, which would be known as Wycliffe Bible Translators here. Pretty much every fact in the newspaper is incorrect, but that's just kind of how they do things in PNG. Somebody finds a picture and they make up a story to go with it, and they print it in the newspaper. But I do have a few weeks. Yeah, so I've got a copy of that newspaper clipping. I laminated it. A friend of mine in Madang, a couple weeks after this whole ordeal went down, he came to me and he's like, "Ray, look, you were in the newspaper." I was like, "Thanks." And then when we got the car repaired, because the windows were smashed out and everything, the guy who repaired our car, he gave me, I know you're not going to be able to see it, but he pulled a couple slugs out of the chassis. He said, "Here, you can keep these as a souvenir." Yeah. So, it was a scary time. I was shot at. The men eventually caught me. They forced me into the back of the truck. It was six guys. They had, four of them had guns, two of them had machetes. They had their own driver, so they took my car, forced me into the back seat, drove up drove up a road basically until they got the car stuck, because the roads are all muddy and nasty. Just drove until they got stuck. Then they took everything I had, which luckily wasn't much. You know, they got my phone, which other than the phone, all they got pretty much was groceries and stuff. So they were thinking I was making a bank run to get payroll for our employees. Because they kept asking me, "Where's the bag of money? Where's the bag of money?" I said, "I didn't go to the bank. I was just buying groceries." So they thought they were going to get a big payday, but what they got was, you know, groceries and an iPhone that they can't use or do anything with. In the moment, most people are like, "You must have been so scared." In the moment, I was just thankful that Jessica and the kids weren't with me, because normally when I go grocery shopping, we're all together as a family. And so I was just thankful that they weren't with me. They got, like I said, we got stuck. They took all the stuff and ran into the jungle and left me there. I found some boys from the local village, helped me get the car unstuck, and I drove into the police station. Made a report. Luckily, my coworker Bill Housley was there at the police station when I got there. And I'm fine. It was a little bit traumatic, and the first couple weeks especially were very difficult, but I would say after a few months, life was back to normal, and, you know, we were back on it. And I was very thankful during that time. Oftentimes what happens is people wanting to encourage the missionaries they support when they go through a traumatic event, they say things like, "Are you okay? You know, you guys, if you need time, come home and we'll give you time." We were so thankful that that's not what we got from people. We got people saying, "Do you guys think you can keep going? And keep, you know, pushing through and keep working?" And, you know, and that was encouraging to us. That's really what we wanted. We didn't want an easy way out. And so we're very thankful that we were able to continue, press on, stay involved in ministry, and finish out our full term. Yeah, so that was a traumatic event for Jessica and I. Again, another one where the kids had a great testimony. From what I wasn't there. I was being kidnapped. But from what I hear, my wife was going a little bit crazy. She kind of saw the whole thing happen, because I was kidnapped right outside of our gate is where they took me. So Jessica kind of saw it happen, and she was kind of freaking out. But our kids were the ones saying, "Mommy, calm down. God's got this. You know, God will take care of Daddy. Daddy's going to probably, he's going to be sharing the gospel with those people." You know, they were the ones encouraging her and helping her get through a rather difficult time. The whole ordeal only lasted a couple hours, I would say, the whole thing. I was home, you know, even after filing a police report, I think I was home maybe 4 hours after the whole thing happened. So it was not, you know, this wasn't anything like, if you guys know Steve Godbold, what happened to him in Africa. It was not that kind of thing. So we spent the last 3 months or so of our term in back in the town of Kavieng working on the base there with another family, Philip and Johanna Rindlisbacher. They're in the bottom left photo pictured with us there. They're in the back right side of that photo. And these are our new coworkers. And they are also in home assignment right now. He's Swiss and she's German. And they're in Switzerland right now. But these are our new coworkers, and we're hoping that when we get back in, we're hoping to be back in PNG around August. We'll be working with them. We'll be starting to make our plans, working out logistics for a bush location for us to move in full time to do a full time church planting ministry. So while we were in Kavieng, we got to spend a lot of time with Philip and Johanna. We got to get to know them quite well. We really had a good connection. We also, it was sort of a match made in heaven. We have very complementary gifts and skills. I think we're going to be a good team working together with them. So we do finally have a team set up. We're hoping that this one will stick. We're praying and asking the Lord. You know, the losing our first two team sets of teammates taught us everything in life has to be held loosely with an open hand, and you have to trust the Lord. And sometimes the plans change. So now I think we're going into it with maybe a healthier attitude of, you know, Lord willing, these are our teammates. Lord willing, we're going to be doing ministry with these folks for the next 15 or 20 years. But that's our plan, and we'll see if it lines up with God's plan. When we go back to PNG, we're going to be headed back to this place right here. It's a place called V2. It's a small island in the Bismarck Sea, very remote. There's about somewhere between probably 4,000 and 8,000 people that live on this island, along with a couple other nearby islands. We did a survey there. I went there with Chris Weaver, the guy I mentioned before, and the guy in the front of this photo here, his name's Ben Buckner. He's also a church planner in PNG. We went there to do a survey, find out if there was a need for missionaries. V2 is a very spiritually dark place. There are a lot of Catholics there, but when I say Catholics, what I mean is there are a lot of animists that worship their ancestors and do all their forms of magic and all that stuff, and then they put a veneer of Catholicism on top of it. Nobody out there could even tell us really who Jesus was, except for there was a small SDA church, and they told us, when we asked them some theological questions, they answered them back perfectly in English, which at first we might have said, wow, maybe there's a church out here or something, but, you know, because they're answering these questions quite well. But we knew something was wrong when they were answering in English because they don't speak English. So some SDA missionaries, brought them out some English pamphlets that said this is who Jesus is. And they taught them to memorize it in English. We started asking them questions about, tell us about the resurrection. You said you believe in the resurrection. What is that? They told us a story about some turtles who come up on land, and they climbed up a tree and then died and fell down, and the people ate the turtles, and later some baby turtles came out of their excrement. And I mean, I'm being serious. This is the kind of bizarre things that they believe. So they think they would call themselves Christians, but they really have no understanding of the gospel, no idea who Jesus is. It was very clear to us that there was a real need to have somebody out there preaching the gospel to these people. So this is the people group we're hoping to go to. So if you think of it again, please say a prayer for the V2 people. Lord willing, we will be hopefully by the end of this year moved out to V2, living among these people, learning their language, and beginning to minister to them. So that's a summary of our first term there in PNG. If there are any questions, there's always questions. We don't really have time for questions right now, but after the service, or if you see me and you want to ask a question. For anyone who's listening online, if you have questions, Charlie would know how to contact me, and we're happy to have a phone call or an email conversation or whatever. We know there's always questions about things like this. So. Do we need anything? Yeah, we need rent relief. Have you guys seen the prices of apartments in Sarasota? No, I mean, we're provided for, Jim, thank you. Through a lot of people sitting in this room, the Superior Word has been very supportive of us and other people in the community. We have been well provided for. And if we do have a need that comes up, we will. I'll let Charlie know, and Charlie will let you guys know if we have any major needs. But we really appreciate the support that you guys have given us over the years, and just so thankful to be back here with you guys, sharing with you again. So.
Don't go away.
Okay, not going away.
Okay, so this is Ray Willett. He's explained his situation there, and I did not say this at the beginning, but I watched Ray grow up, he and his wife Jess. And they were not married when I knew them. They were just little kids, and this is something that they had planned on doing, and it's something that they have faithfully pursued doing. And when they said they don't have any needs, he's not being true to you. Okay, they have needs. They're missionaries, and I know that they're underfunded. Unless you've got a sudden funding that I don't know about, I know that they need people to support them. Okay, and so anybody that wants to help these two, if you can give a monthly donation, you can give an annual donation, you can give a one-time donation, whatever. You can email me, and I will give you the information. But needs to be funded for people to do things like this. I mean, getting shot at is not free, okay? So by all means, please consider that, pray about it, and help support them. That would be something that I would personally be grateful for, having known him all these years and being so proud of the direction they've taken in their lives. And I can honestly say that this guy here is one of my true heroes. So keep that in mind, and thank you, Ray.
Thanks, Charlie.
All right.